Good morning. Today's Dafim Baba Basra's Kuf Samech. Hey, we are on the very bottom of Kuf Samech Talmud Beis. We're talking about contract law. We're talking about shtaros. The Vega got yesterday very detailed regarding the protection of a shtar, making sure that it's as tamper-proof, tamper-resistant as possible. We don't want the shtars to be manipulated and forged. And so the Gemara yesterday spoke, the day before, but really since the beginning of the Perek started on Kuf Samech, we're already up to Kuf Samech. So most of the Gemara has been spending time discussing how to make sure that the document is as faithful and honest as could possibly be. The Gemara then turned to the opinion of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel yesterday. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel talked about the conversion of a get makusha into a get pashut. That was problematic because of the dating of the dating system used. The dating system on the get makusha is 1 year off. In other words, wherever the king lies right now in terms of his kingdom, in terms of his monarchy, and a get makusha, they're going to add a year to the king. That was a minhag. That was a common practice that was done back then, and it was and so therefore the dating is off. And what Rebbe just wondered is, if the dating between the Get Makusha and the Get Pashut are off, so how can you convert from one to the other? It would lead to problems. The Gemara yesterday detailed and outlined exactly what those problems would look like. As long as we were discussing Rebbe and the Get Makusha, so the Gemara continued to discuss other things that Rebbe was puzzled about regarding the Get Makusha. And we continued yesterday in the Gemara. We're on Kuf Samech Talmud Beis. And Hahu Makusha, I know I did this yesterday, but this is where we're going to start. Two-thirds of the way down on Kuf Samech Talmud Beis, there was a Makusha Dasa coming to Rebbe that was born from a Rebbe. V'am Rebbe Ein Zman B'zeh. And Rebbe said, I don't know where's the date? Right, this is a story that already the Gemara told once before in the 10th Perek. This is the second time the Gemara is telling the story. And he can't find the date on the document. The document without a date, that's it's not good. So Amalei Rebbe Shema Rebbe, Le Rebbe Shema Ben Kishara Muvla. So his son suggested to him, you know what, maybe somewhere in the creases, in the folds. It's a get makusha. It's a fold to get. So let's unfold it. Maybe we'll find the date. So palya. So they peeled the back v'chazi and they found the date. So hadar chazi be Rebbe bebishus. Now Rebbe looked very upset. And as I quoted the Rashbam yesterday, and just to repeat the Rashbam, Rebbe was upset because Rebbe in general hold that we shouldn't be writing up get the makusha. Meaning it's just it is a viable way to write a contract, but it shouldn't be done. And Rebbe was just upset over the fact that he was frustrated. Nobody should be writing again makusha. So Amalei Lav Anika Safte Rav Yehuda Chayte Kasvei. So his son said to his father, "Look, I understand you're upset, Dad, but it's not me. Somebody else, Rav Yehuda Chayte." So he was the one who wrote this get makusha. So don't be upset with me. So Amalei Klach Melashon Harazet. So then Rebbe turned to his son and says, "Okay. Whether I thought you wrote it or didn't write it, now I'm definitely upset with you because now you're saying Lashon Hara about somebody else, and so you should stay away from Lashon Hara." Okay. Zimnan Haviyasek Kamevika Pasek Sidra B'Sefer Tehillim. There was another occasion where he was sitting in front of him, and he was learning Sefer Tehillim. So Amar Rebbe Kama Miyushar Ksavze. Now, Rebbe's looking at the Sefer Tehillim, and remember, Sefer Tehillim back then, it wasn't a printed book, you know, right? The printing press came just slightly after Rebbe's time, over 1,000 years after Rebbe. Rebbe died and died. Rebbe lived around the end of the second century. Printing press was 15th century. Okay, so over 1,000 years, so it wasn't, obviously it wasn't a printed book, it was a cloth. It was a cloth where they wrote Sefer Tehillim. So Rebbe's reading from it, and Rebbe's saying, this is beautiful. What a beautiful ksav. So Amalei Lav Ana Kasav to Yehuda Chayte Kasvei. So his son said, well, don't give me the credit, but give the credit to Rebbe Yehuda Chayte. He was the one who wrote it. So Amalei Klach Milashon Hara Hazeh. So the Gemara says, once again, Rebbe turned to his son and said, no, that's Lashon Hara. You shouldn't say such things. So in other words, I didn't ask you to identify who wrote it. I just was simply complimenting how nice the ksav was. Now you're telling me who wrote it. That's Lashon Hara, and that you shouldn't say. The question which probably you're thinking. The Gemara asks, Blish Lama Hasamika Lashon Hara. Now when Rebbe was upset about the Get Makusha, and the son said, oh, don't look at me, it's Rebbe Yehuda Chayte. So the Gemara says, it's Rav Yehuda Chayta who did it. And you can understand that that's Lashon Hara. Because Rav Yehuda was upset, meaning Rebbe. I mean, I'm right, but let me just refer to him as Rebbe. Rebbe was upset because, again, Rebbe felt that nobody should be writing a Get Mekushar. So he felt that the person was doing so incorrectly. So when his son said, oh, I know who did it, and he told him who did it, so that's Lashon Hara. The Gemara says, that I get. But Elahacha, my Lashon Harika. So the Gemara says, but over here, Rebbe was complimenting the Ksav. This is a really good sofer. And the son says, oh, I'll tell you who it is. That's Lashon Hara? So the Gemara says, Ika Mishum Rav Dimi Ditni. So the Gemara says, yes, it's a form of Lashon Hara. And the Gemara goes on to explain, Rav Dimi Achud, Rav Safra, La'olam Ayisaper Adam B'Tovaso Shol Chavero. A person should not say complimentary things about his friend. Shemitok Tovaso Bali De Raso, because out of saying complimentary things about a friend, so it'll lead to insulting things. Oh, he's such a good guy, you can't even imagine. Here's an example of why he's such a good guy. And people around say, oh, really? You know what? It's funny. Yeah, I hear that, but he's not that good. Like, settle down. And then everyone is going to chime in with a not flattering story about the individual, and the Gemara says, so, as a form of Lashon Hara, the Gemara is going to use the terminology in just a moment of Avak Lashon Hara. It's the dust of Lashon Hara. As a form of Lashon Hara, if you are complimentary to a person in front of other people, it'll open up a Pandora's box, and other people will start raining criticism.
Rabbi, the commentary says, throughout the Talmud, it says it right here, that they praise their teachers.
Right.
It's the excessive.
Right, there's right, over-complimenting. If you read the Rambam, I don't have the Rambam in front of me right now, please forgive me, but if you read the Rambam says that complimenting somebody in front of people who don't support the individual, meaning that's that will lead about to hypercriticism about the individual. Anyway, Amar v'amar ma'amar rav shosha v'eris ein adam nitzol behem b'chol yom. So there are averus which are just simply chronic averus, and the Gemara acknowledges, meaning that we are human beings, we are suffering from what's called the human condition, and as human beings, there are just averus which are unavoidable. Okay, so and the Gemara goes and enumerates them. Here are avera in tefillah v'lashon hara. So the Gemara says, one is here avera. Here are avera. The Rashbam explains is thinking about arayos. The truth of the matter is the Rashbam not here explains it that way, but that's generally speaking how Hira Aver is understood. It's thoughts of Gilu Arayus. And Ion Tefillah is an interesting one. The Gemara says that's something which we chronically suffer from. What is Ion Tefillah? So here I'll turn to the Rashbam. The bottom Rashbam on Kuf Samach Talmud Beis, he writes, Yesh Mefarshim Shalacha Shehispalal Dam Belibo Shehisham Lo Kosh Baruch Hu Scharo V'yasek Kosh Baruch Hu Tzarchav Yishma Tefillah So Lefi Shehispalal Bekavana. You had a great davening, okay? So that which is great. When I say great davening, I mean that you actually concentrated on that which you said. Okay, great davening. You daven with kavana, and then after davening with kavana, so then you think to yourself, okay, I davened beautifully. Everything was great. Now Hashem should answer me because I davened beautifully. That is what the Rashbam describes as Ian Tefillah. And the Gemara says, and look, that's a chronic problem. Now, I only smile and laugh because it's a chronic problem if you daven beautifully. Meaning if you don't daven beautifully, if you just mumble the words, if you just, you know, mindlessly daven, so then you're never going to get to this problem because you didn't daven beautifully. But the chronic issue over here is that if and when you do daven beautifully, so you think to yourself, okay, now Hashem has to listen to me. No, Hashem does listen. It's just that, you know, the response that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives is going to be the one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels is the appropriate response, and it's not always the way we want it. So that's the Rashbam's explanation of Ian Tefillah. If you look at Tosfos over here, Tosfos on the bottom of the Amud, last Tosfos, he writes, Ian Tefillah Hu Rakish Mahar B'Tefillaso Kedarmina Bebra. Sorry, I should have just bypassed the entire first part of the Tosfos. He doesn't like the Rashbam's explanation. Venir l'Rebbe. The Ian Tefillah Shu Rashi Eino Mechavim Tefillasam. So the Tosfos says, you know what the chronic issue is regarding davening? And this is unfortunately something that we relate to, and that is not davening with Kavanah. Meaning, even tefillah just simply means that you're saying the words, you're looking at the words, but you're not thinking about what you're saying. It's mindless davening. It's very difficult, says Tosfos, to have concentration and intent during the totality of davening. It's very difficult. And that's a chronic issue, and this is number two. This is the second of the chronic issues. So we have three chronic averas, which the Gemara identifies over here, and the first one is Hira Avera, thinking about illicit relations. Two is Iyun Tfila, which again, Rashbam says it's the post-davening expectation that things are going to go your way because you daven beautifully. Or, according to Tosfos, it's the lack of kavana during davening. And then, the third thing is Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is a chronic issue. We always speak Lashon Hara. Now, Lashon Hara, Sakadacha, the Gemara, even the Gemara is incredulous over the idea that we're going to be speaking Lashon Hara all the time, every day. Okay. Unfortunately, by the way, just I'm reporting that, which hopefully is not Lashon Hara, but how ironic. But no, people do. People do speak Lashon Hara. But the Gemara says no, but it can't be. Meaning people are not that malicious that we're just chronically speaking Lashon Hara all the time. Ella avak Lashon Hara. But forms of Lashon Hara, however, that we do say, that's a chronic issue. Like, in other words, the example we just gave, somebody compliment another person, that's Lashon Hara? And the answer is, under certain circumstances, yes, that's absolutely right. Even an over-compliment or complimenting in front of other people who are generally detractors of that person, that's a form of Lashon Hara, and that's a chronic issue, and that's something that we stumble over all the time. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Rav, because I'm Mir Barayos. V'akol b'lashon hara. So, once again, the Gemara makes another statement regarding the human condition, meaning, again, we try to be as good as we can, we try to be as compliant as we can, but the human condition is such where Rav Begezel, most people are involved in stealing. Now, again, stealing over here, let's not go overboard. We're not talking about just taking something forcefully that does not belong to me. Over here, the Rashbam explains gzela, meaning where you justify and rationalize, right? I'm at work, I take a pen. Right? Why? Okay, they have so many over here. They get in bulk. I'm using it sometimes for work. In other words, and you justify and you rationalize your action. Right? The Rashbam writes, Morim Lehetera, it's the second Rashbam in the Amud. Rov b'nei Adam chashum ala gezo kein gezo, shemorim lehetera b'masav v'matan la'akev ish me'revach haroi lo l'chavero. Right? Or let's say I take away from somebody's profit. Right? I try to shave his profit. So again, it's ke'ein gzela. That's what the Gemara means. And most people are involved in this. And again, the Gemara is not, obviously, the Gemara is not condoning. The Gemara is just simply saying that that's part of the human condition. So rov begezel, mi'ud ba'arayos. Now, some people are involved in arayos. And hakol b'lashon hara, but everybody's involved in lashon hara. And again, the Gemara says, lashon hara zakadacha. You think outright, straightforward, blatant lashon hara, where I am going out of my way to disparage another person. Meaning there are people like that, but not everybody, not all the time. So once again, based on what we just learned together, the Gemara modifies. Zakadacha ela avak. Lashon Hara. No, but these subtle forms of Lashon Hara, where I compliment somebody, and again, I do so in a way where it's going to elicit a negative response by the listener, so that's a form of Lashon Hara, and the Gemara says, and that's something where everybody's involved in, and again, we should try to minimize it, obviously, but the Gemara acknowledges that it's very hard, and it's part of the human condition, that's just simply, we are hardwired that way. Okay. Kuf Samechei Amad Aleph, we are on the very top of the Amud, we are now continuing in the Mishnah. We are still on the first Mishnah of the 10th Perek. The first Mishnah of the 10th Perek introduced us to the idea of Get Pashut, Get Mekushar, gave us differentiation between Get Pashut versus Get Mekushar, and then brought in the opinion of Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, says that you can convert a Get Mekushar into a Get Pashut. And then the Gemara brought in the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And he made a statement which is really cryptic. And I'm reading the Mishnah back in Kuf Samech. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Amar HaKol Kiminag HaMedina. Everything follows the custom of the land. Okay, what's he talking about? Gemara goes on to discuss. Like, he doesn't buy into that idea in general. And what does it have to do anything over here with Get Pasha versus Get Makusha? The Gemara goes on to explain. Let's say our community, whenever writing up a contract, we write contracts which are Get Pasha. Simple, one-sided contracts. Ksav, Edim, that, all on the same side. So Va'amale Avili Pashit. And the person says, look, let's write up a contract. We're going to do it. I'm going to lend you money. Let's write up a contract. And he tells the sofer, I want you, the sofer, to write a get Pashit. So the custom is to write a get Pashit. I instructed a get Pashit. And then Va'azo Avale Makushar. And then the sofer violated two things. One, the general minhag of the community. Two, my clear instructions. Both were pointing that he should be writing a get pashin, and he wrote a get mekushar. So the Gemara says kpeda. So va'azo avale mekushar kpeda. Fine. So that's, in other words, so because the custom was to write pashit, and my insistence was to write pashit, he should have written pashit, and because he wrote a get mekushar, therefore the document does not have validity. Gemara says that's fine, and not only that, meaning we understand that, and everyone agrees to that. Now, Nehigi Makushav Amalei Avalei Makushav Aza Avalei Pasha Kepeda. And we could say it the other way around as well. Meaning, if the prevalent custom is write Get Makushar, and I tell him to write Get Makushar, and the sofer then goes rogue and writes Get Pashut, so the Gemara says, again, he violated the general minug and my instruction, and therefore, once again, the document is no good. Okay. Gemara says, and we all agree to that, and that's the starting point of our discussion. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you where the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon and Gamliel are at odds with one another. Let's say, what's the community custom? Either way. In other words, you could, with some people, sometimes we get pashut, sometimes we get makusha. So in other words, the minhag does not identify one particular path in terms of writing up a document. We write both in our community. Now the person who wants to contract written up says to the sofer, write for me a get pashut. Fine. And now the sofer wrote the more complicated, complex get mekushar. So now, although he was instructed how to write the get, there was no prevalent minhag in our community. Is such a document going to be valid or invalid? Marsav or Kepeda. Now the Tanakhama says, oh, that's, I'm going to be makbid. Meaning, my instructions were to write a get pashut, even though the custom of the community is to write both, but you didn't follow my instruction, no good. The document is no good. And Marsavar Maramakam Hulo. And Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion, Maramakam. Maramakam just simply means, look, I'm advising you. There's no prevalent custom in our community. We do both, right? Get Pashut, get Makushar. But look, if you ask me, get Pashut's much easier. It's a one-sided document. It's a lot less complex. Write a get Pashut. And he, the sofer, decides on his own, I'm going to write get Makushar. It's more complicated, but he feels like he could do it. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, look, if the minhag is to write both, and he decided which one to write, even though that's not the one I preferred, it is going to be acceptable, it's going to be okay. And this is what the Gemara describes as maramakam. Maramakam means, look, I'm guiding him down a path, but he doesn't necessarily have to take the path I'm guiding him down, as long as what he does is perfectly acceptable. Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, now that we know Pshat in the Mishnah between and the Machlok is between Rav Shimon Gamliel and Tanakhama, so Abaye says, so let me do what I classically do throughout the Gemara, string tonight together. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Rav Shimon, Rav Elazar, Kula Sfira Lehu Maramakam Hulo. This idea of Maramakam, where there are two ways to do something, there's an easier way and a harder way. I suggest to him, why don't you take the easier path? And he decides on his own, I'll take the harder path. As long as they are both viable options, that's fine. And now Rabbi is going to point out three Tanaim agree to this idea of Mar Makam Hula. Rav Shimon Gamliel Hadamar. So Rav Shimon Gamliel we just went through. In the case where the custom is to write both Get Pashut, Get Makushar, I suggest Get Pashut. He on his own decides Get Makushar, that's fine. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon Danan, and here we turn to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is describing the Mishnah in Kedushin. The Mishnah in Kedushin and Daf Mem Ches Amud Beis tells us the following: a woman, in order to undergo Kedushin, so she has to accept Kesef Kedushin. Okay, she doesn't have to accept it herself. She can accept it through a shliach. She appoints a shliach to accept the Kesef Kedushin, and she tells her shliach, look, accept for me my Kesef Kedushin, but accept it in the form of, and she mentions a metal that she would prefer. Now, it could be gold, it could be silver, it could be coins of gold, it could be coins of silver. And she turns to her shliach and says, I prefer this. Or, you know, in other words, she identifies a particular metal. Now, gold is more valuable than silver. And what happens? Let's go now back to the Gemara. Let's see the Mishnah inside. Rabbi Shimon Omri, Mitel Sheva Charezim Mekudeshes. Now, Rabbi Shimon says as follows. Let's say that the shliach picked up for her. In other words, the woman said, I'd prefer to get married with kesef, with silver. And the shliach picked up for her gold. Now, that's not what she wanted. Or that's not what she... let me not say it that way. That's not what she suggested. She suggested silver, and meanwhile it turned into gold. It didn't turn into gold, but well, the shlech received gold. So the Mishnah says that according to Rabbi Shimon, mikudeshes. Now she said silver. Why should the kedushin be good? Because again, Rabbi Shimon subscribes to this idea of mar makam hulo. Because we understand that her instruction to her shliach is, look, I know there is multiple avenues in terms of different types of money that I can receive for kesef kedushin. But my preference is silver.
You said something gold and did silver.
I know. It's the
exchangeable.
Right. This particular example is not as right. It's not as pronounced as the previous example.
It really shouldn't matter because if she accepts it, the kedushin's good.
But remember though, she's not the one who accepted it. The shliach who accepted it, and she was instructing her shliach what to take. And even though the shliach took something which was improved and better, that's fine. And again, based on this principle, mar makom hula. And finally, the third of these tanaim is Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar, nanan, isha shama iskaba legiti mimakom ploni. A woman says to her shliach, look, I want you to accept again on my behalf. Again, she appoints a shliach. And she tells her shliach instructions of where to pick up the get. And she points to a particular town to go to. Okay. Now the town happens to be proximate to where they are. And the shliach then goes to a further place, to a place which is a further distance, in order to pick up the get over there. So again, here I say this most literally. There are two paths to go down in terms of where for her to pick up the get for her mishaleach, for the one who sent her. And there was an easier path and a more difficult path. She traversed the more difficult path in order to pick up the get. So once again, are we saying that when given the instruction, the mishalech, the woman receiving the get, was being very specific, and she only wanted the get to be picked up in such and such a place, or mar makom hulo, she was just simply pointing to the easier path to take, but the shliach, if he or she wanted to take a more difficult, challenging path, may have the right to do so. So once again, the Mishnah says, Haisha Shama Iskabala Gitima Makam Plani Vikibala Mimakam Acher Pasol. So the Tanakhama says it's no good because the Tanakhama clearly understands that her instruction is just that. Instruction. This is what I want you to do. I don't want you to do any other way. Don't go to another place in order to pick up the get in another place. That's the Tanakhama's understanding for Rebbe Elazar Machshir. And Rebbe Elazar says, no, it's fine. It's fine. Meaning she was pointing to a particular place, but that's only out of ease and convenience. But if you, the shlich, want to go somewhere else to pick it up somewhere else, even though it's a further travel for you, you have the right to do so. Mara makam hulo. Mar sever kpeda, mar sever mara makam hulo. So Abaye just put together three tanayim who subscribe to this idea that when I'm giving an instruction, a preference, I am not rejecting the other way to do it, a more difficult and complex way to do it. I'm just simply trying to provide convenience for you. But if you want to do it another way, you could do it another way.
Rabbi, does it make a difference if she confused two terms? Does it make a difference whether she's saying, I prefer gold, or she's saying, oh, by the way, just so you know, the easiest way to do this is to use gold?
The easiest way is silver. In other words, silver is...
What I'm saying, but when she's expressing this mm-hmm. words, is she giving him advice? Or
right.
Is she expressing an opinion, and does it make a difference?
Right, well, that's basically what the debate is. The debate between the Tanaim is she advising or is she instructing? So Abaye says these three particular tanaim understand advisement,
right.
Not instruction.
Right. Did they accept the view?
I don't know. It's interesting because I also don't know. In other words, do we accept all three viewpoints on the same principle? Okay, it's the right question to ask. I don't know. Okay, pasha shekasavo eid echad. Okay. What then did we learn in the Mishnah? Minimum number of people signing on a document. On a get pasha, you need two witnesses. On a get mekusha, you need three witnesses. The Gemara asks a really simple question. We're on Kuf Samachemud Aleph, more 2/3 of the way down on the Amud. Bishlam Makusha Shakasa Boshne Aid and Pasal Itzrech Sakadat Chaminahova Alma Kasher Hachanami Kasher Kamashmal and the Pasal. Let's start with again Makusha. The Mishnah says 3 and the Mishnah says not 2. And you understand why the Mishnah has to say not 2. Because 2 is good in general. 2 is the number of Adam that I need in order to substantiate something. And so when the Get Makusha has 2, so one could have thought to make a very simple argument. It's not the best way to do it, meaning the rabbis taught us that when we write Get Makusha, we need 3, but if I write 2, if I have 2 witnesses, it should be okay, shouldn't it? And then the Mishnah comes along to teach us it's not okay. The Chachamim gave a format and a specific formula to how to write a Get Makusha, and the Chachamim demanded 3 witnesses, and that means anything short of 3 witnesses is no good. And that's a Chiddush, and the Mishnah needs to teach us that. But the Gemara says, but let's go on to the next part of the Mishnah, which is Ela Pashut. Shekatzapo Eira Chad Pshita. The Mishnah then goes on to say that if I have a Get Pashut where it's only one witness signing, so that's no good. I need a Mishnah to teach me that? Meaning, anything short of 2 witnesses obviously is no good. Why would the Mishnah have to then teach me, oh, if it's a Get Pashut, I only have 1 witness, so that's no good. Obviously it's no good. So the Gemara says, Amar Abayla Nitzrucha Dafilo Eirecha B'Ksav Eirecha B'Peh. Ah. So Abaye says that the Mishnah is teaching us the following. Let's say I do have 2 witnesses. One signed on the document and one is giving oral testimony. And now, question, and a really good one. Can I take these 2 testimonies, put them together in order to get to the requisite 2 necessary in order to substantiate something?
Is he giving oral testimony in front of
18? Yeah. Right.
And,
yes.
And then
coupled. Coupled with the 1 witness who's signing on the document. And so now, can I take these 2 and put them together in order to string together the 2 witnesses necessary? Oh, so Abaye says that's exact. Now I understand what the Mishnah is telling me. Meaning, Abaye is telling me that what the Mishnah is teaching me is that's no good. Of course, if all I had was 1 witness, whether it was oral testimony, whether it was written testimony, of course that's no good. 1 is nothing in halacha. Although, again, when I say nothing, you understand that in certain areas in halacha, 1 witness would be sufficient. Edus Isha, Sota, okay, not for now. But in general, 1 witness is nothing, and we knew that, and I don't need the Mishnah for that. But if it's 1 witness and written, plus 1 witness oral, I might have thought that they should be able to combine, and the Mishnah is telling me that they're not going to combine. Ah. Amemar, Akshar Beidechad, Biksa Beidechad Ba'peh. And interestingly enough, Amemar says, you know what? It does work. An oral testimony of a single witness together with a written testimony of a single witness can be combined in order for it to work. And the Rashbam writes, and this is now second to last Rashbam in the Amud, Amemar Akshar Beidechad, Biksa, Biksa Yadom Mikuyami Makam Akher Beidim, Beidechad Nami Ba'peh Maset Aloso Milveh. So I have 1 witness on the document, and it's been notarized, it's been certified, and I have to get coupled with that 1, so then it's going to work. Venir be'enai delagamim machshir afilu tirif makuchos kilu nichtemushne edim. Excuse me, kilu nichtemushne edim. And the Rashman provides for us what could be viewed as a tremendous chiddush, and that is, do you know how effective this now? Combined testimony of the 1 written witness and the 1 oral testimony of a witness. I think, says the Rashbam, that it's so strong and so powerful that you can even collect lekuchos, meaning this will affect a lien on a property. Even though we generally say in order to affect a lien on a property, you need 2 witnesses signing on a document. But if I have the document and I have 1 witness signing on the document coupled with oral testimony, the Rashbam says that at least according to a Maamar, that's good even for the purpose of lekuchos.
How do you know that oral testimony happened?
Meaning we're in court.
It's not written.
I know that, but we're in court. And I'm trying to get my money back, and so I bring in the paperwork, and the paperwork only has 1 witness, and I bring in at that point in time.
Yeah,
I bring in the 1-8.
Rabbi, just to be clear, the shtar is a shtar in every sense of the words, it's got 1 signature.
Right.
It's not an oral witnessing.
Correct. Correct. And then, and
someone saying that I on this day saw this happening and submitting.
Correct. Correct. You're right. For every detail, the contract is a good contract, but there's just 1 part missing, and that is the second witness. So then you could supplement it now with a oral testimony of a single witness. And that would, and what the Rashbam is telling us, it's again, it's, it could be viewed as a big chiddush, is that now that's going to have the full power of a shtar.
In other places, does the shtar with one signature have any standing?
No. In other words, witness.
In the absence of any information.
Right. In the absence of any other information, a one witness. Again, there are areas in halacha where one witness is going to have effectiveness, but in terms of extraction of money, no.
But a shtar.
No.
One
signature shtar. No. Never has standing. No. So.
Just
accepted
view.
No. Wait. So wait. Okay. So achshav eidecha b'ksav amar le Rav Ashi la meimar v'hada bayimai. So Rav Ashi says to Meimar, wait 1 second. Slow down. Our Mishnah. Remember our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that one witness is no good. And we asked the question, what does that mean, one witness is no good? Of course we know one witness is no good. And Abayi says, well, I'll tell you Pshah in the Mishnah. Pshah in the Mishnah is that one witness coupled with one witness written, coupled with one witness oral, is what the Mishnah is addressing. And the Mishnah is saying that's no good. That's what Abayi said Pshah in the Mishnah was. So the Gemara says to Meimar, Rav Ashi says to Meimar, that's a very good Pshah in our Mishnah. But if that's the correct Pshah in our Mishnah, so then you're not right. What are you going to do with the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Amar le lo shmi'a li klamar lo svir li. So Meimar says very simply and very dismissively, I don't hold of Abaye, and I don't hold of this Pshah in the Mishnah. Okay. So, Ela Kasha Masnisen. So the Gemara says, okay, that's fine, meaning, you know, he's entitled to his opinion, that's good. But what is he going to do with our Mishnah? What is our Meimar going to do with our Mishnah? We're now on the top of Kuf Samach Hamid Beis. So Hakam Ashmalan Dishnaim Ben Mekusha Kedecha Bepasha Ma Hasam Psula Daraisa Af Hachanami Psula Daraisa. So our Meimar says, this is Pshat in our Mishnah. You know, what the Mishnah is teaching us is the following. When I have a Get Pashat, and I don't have two witnesses, I only have one, does that work? The answer is no. Does that work on a daraisa level? Once again, the answer is no. Meaning, if it's short of two, which of course means one, meaning if there's only one witness on the document, it's simply no good, period. There's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to discuss. What the Mishnah wants to teach us as a Meimar is that by, again, Mekushar, same story. If there are not three witnesses, but rather two witnesses, so we could say, well, I know it should have three, but two is valuable. Too significant. And what a Meimar says the Mishnah is teaching us is no. When it comes to a Get Mekushar, if there are no three witnesses on the Get Mekushar, it's only two, it is simply no good. You can make an argument that two is in general okay. Yes, you can make that argument, but it's not going to work over here. It's simply not good. Now the Gemara... Huh? Yeah, the Gemara uses the word Psul D'Araisa. Okay, let's understand. Psul D'Araisa is a very strong language. It's not a Psul D'Araisa, meaning Get Mekushar. The Torah never taught us about Get Mekushar. Get Mekushar was an innovation that was done, an institution that was done by the Chachamim. But what the Gemara is saying when the Gemara is using the words Psul D'Araisa, it means that once a Chachamim instituted that a Get Mekushar requires three witnesses, anything short of that is simply no good. It's unacceptable. Yeah. So again, it's not convertible. Now I know in the Mishnah there is an opinion that says it is convertible, but it's not. In other words, we hold it's not convertible. Okay. So the Teda. So they asked Rav Yirmiyah the following question. Where was Rav Yirmiyah at the time? It was outside the Beis Medrash. Outside the Beis Medrash? Well, what's he doing outside of the Beis Medrash? So this takes us back to the beginning of the Masechta. We have just tied together in this line of Gemara, like the beginning, Daf Chav Gimel, with our Gemara right now, Kuf Samechei. Okay, so he's been out of the... I mean, I know they didn't learn Daf Yomi back then. I know that. You know that. But, in other words, I'm saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek, but he's been out of the Beis Medrash now for 130 blot of Gemara. Daf Yomi terminology. That's almost 4 months. Okay, but anyway. Okay, but Rav Yirmiyah is outside the base medrash. What was the issue? Remember, there was the birds that was, you know, that are stay within a 50 amma confine of the birdhouse, and you find the bird, and when you picked up the bird, one foot was within 50 ammas, the other foot was outside of 50 ammas, and they said to Rav Yirmiyah, like, enough already, like, and they threw Rav Yirmiyah out of the base medrash. And so Shach Mitam Chavela Rav Yirmiyah. So they asked Rav Yirmiyah the following question: as he's outside the base medrash, meaning, look, he to the best of our understanding, he got put in the penalty box. But in other words, that didn't he was in timeout. But they still, in other words, they still communicated with him. They still conversed with him. Okay. So anyway, so the Rav Yirmiyah Eidecha Biksav Eidecha Rapem Mahu Sheet Starfo. So addressing our very question, can you take one witness oral, one witness written, and combine the two? Ali b'detana kamad Rav Yeshua ben Karchaloti b'ayalach da'afilu shleim b'ksav v'shleim ba'peh lo mitzarfei. So the Gemara says, well, what about according to Rav Yeshua ben Karcha? Now this is going to the beginning of the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Not the real beginning, but third parak. Third parak of Sanhedrin, which parenthetically, by the way, it's coming up not so far from now. Right? Less than 2 months away. So we're going to be here in Daf Lamed in Sanhedrin. And according to Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, he's of the opinion that if I have a group, one witness talking about a loan that occurred on Sunday, and another witness talking about a loan that occurred on Monday. Now, it's a little bit strange. They're not describing seemingly the same loan, but they are describing the same obligation. Meaning the common denominator between these two witnesses is that Reuven owes the Shimon money. So interestingly, Rav Yeshua ben Karcha says that I can combine those testimonies. Now, I know that's very strange because they're saying that the events occurred on different days. And I know that's difficult to understand. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin is going to be discussing this more extensively. But the Gemara over here now, using the opinion of Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, says, look, so so Ella Kitibay Lachaliba Rav Yeshua ben Karcha. Look, according to Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, where I can take these disparate testimonies and combine them. Because again, according to Rav Yeshua ben Karcha, as long as the common denominator is that Reuven owes Shimon money, so then it's combinable. Gemara says that's fine. So, but Rav Yehoshua ben Karcha, would he agree in our scenario when one was oral and the other one was written? One witness oral, one witness written. So, and why, according to Rav Yehoshua ben Karcha, maybe this view is different? Very simple. Because, look, if I take disparate testimonies and combine them, but at least the testimonies are operating on the same mechanical view, mechanical mechanism, meaning they're both oral or they're both written. Over here, one being oral and the other one being written, perhaps Rav Yeshua ben Karcha views them as fundamentally two different types of testimony. So Rav Yirmiyah first makes a humbling statement because he was humbled. So, and that is really, I'm not deserving to even be asked this question. But but if you want my opinion, I think that yes, these two testimonies can be combined. Okay, and now we're from here until the Mishnah. Basically, what we're going to do, we're going to run through this, is basically various forms of what the students asked Rabbi Yirmiyah as he was outside the Beis Medrash. Was his answer accepted? Well, no. In other words, right. Well, right. First, right. The opinion of Yeshua ben Karcha is not accepted. He was only answering within the opinion of Yeshua ben Karcha in terms of what would Rav Yeshua ben Karcha say. But Rav Yeshua ben Karcha's viewpoint is not the accepted one.
We're going back to that conversation when they talk about the written. Is that a star?
Yes.
We're not talking about oral testimony.
Right. In other words,
we're not talking about a written testimony.
Right. In other words, written just simply means it's coming to us via shtar. But there's only one witness on the bottom of the shtar. Okay. Two people testify in this court, and two people are testifying in that court. And so now, can I have the two basins come together in order to combine to make a case? Aliba the Tanakama to Rabbi Nassan Loti Bailach Dafila Bechad Bezdina Nami Lomit Starfish. So the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Nassan, it's not going to work. Now, once again, brings us back to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and we're going to see this in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. But basically, here comes another issue, basic issue in terms of testimony, and that is when the witnesses testify, they're testifying to the same event, but when they're actually submitting their testimony, do they have to be testifying at the same time? Now, obviously, we don't mean over here simultaneous. We're not talking about a duet. But what we are saying, however, is that they have to come one immediately after the other back to back, or no. Is it going to be sufficient if one submits his testimony today and the other one submits his testimony tomorrow or any other interval of time? So once again, that takes us to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the third parak, and machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Nassan. So, and Rabbi Nassan says that testimony submitted on different days is acceptable. So Rabbi Nassan says that yes, if testimony is submitted in two different days by two different people, that's acceptable. But would Rabbi Nassan also agree that if, let's say, the submission of the testimony not only was different intervals, but different bate dinim, maybe Rabbi Nassan would say that's too disparate. So the Gemara says, Odim lo shtar, maybe not. As long as it's submitted, it's fine. And again, his answer is, look, I'm right, as a position of humility, shouldn't be asking me the question. He says, but I think it's acceptable. Even though these witnesses did not submit it at the same time, and even though they did not submit it to the same court, I think it's acceptable.
How can the Bezdin accept the testimony of one witness?
Knowing that there's going to be another... Right. No, I understood. But in other words, according to Rabbi Nassan, if we have a second witness coming at a later point in time testifying, so then I can combine the two. So I can accept the first testimony, and that obviously sets the groundwork now, the foundation, that if I have another one, then it's fine. And what Rabbi Yirmiyah is being mechadish is that the second testimony doesn't even have to come in at the same court. Even if it comes in a different court, that's going to be acceptable, according to Rabbi Nassan.
It's not acceptable to you.
No, but it's interesting. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha is not an accepted viewpoint. Rabbi Nassan is an accepted viewpoint.
Right.
Yeah. And now, is Rabbi Yirmiyah's understanding also going to be accepted? Once again,
so that means that it's two
submission of testimony does not have to come at the same time. Mar Barchi Amar Hachi Shach.
Two different courts, I'm sorry, two different courts also?
That's what I'm saying. That part, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I didn't research it well enough. Mar Barchia Amar Haki Shachu Le Shtaim Sheidu BeBeisin Zeh VeChazu VeEidu BeBeisin Zeh Mao SheYavo Echa Mikol Beisin VeYitzarfu. So the Gemara now really pushes the envelope in terms of what about the following? What if, let's say, I had one witness testifying in front of one court and another witness testifying in front of another court? So now I have two disparate submissions of the testimony, separated both by time and by a court. And now can I have one judge from one court get together with another judge from another court, and they, each judge representing each court, and can I combine it based on just simply these two judges? Now, according to Rabbi Nassan, I think it's obvious. I think it's a no-brainer. Meaning not to adjudicate, just simply to pull the resources together. So,
as Adam,
right, that's what I'm saying. No, not as Adam, just...
Isn't the purpose to adjudicate? I mean, to pull the resources together?
No, I hear you. But in other words, each testimony was properly submitted. And now I'm just simply looking to merge. Okay. So the Gemara says, so look, according to Rabbi Nassan, I think it's a no-brainer. Again, this is Rabbi Yirmiyah's position. Because if I can combine disparate testimonies, I for sure can combine disparate beisdins. But if you don't agree with Rabbi Nassan, so then Rabbi Yirmiyah says, so then I think it's a really good question. So I know witnesses can't combine, but or maybe no. Maybe that if witnesses can't combine, Dayanim also can't combine as well. Shalach lehu, and once again, Ani any kedai shatem shalachtem li ala kach das tamidchem nota sheet starful. But once again, he says, "Look, my opinion. You shouldn't even be asking me." But I know. Well, no, because there are different versions of how the dialogue went. So everyone agrees to basically how he introduced his dialogue. It's just a question of what they asked him and how he and what they answered. So he says, "But I think sheet starful. I think that it should be combinable." And finally, just to finish up to the Mishnah, Ravina Amar Hachishach Lushlosha Shiashu Lekayim Asashtar. Let's say we have now a case where a document is brought to court for the purpose of certification. And you have three judges there, sitting there, and they got the requisite information necessary in order to certify the document. And immediately before certification, Rahman al-Slan, one of the judges, died. Umeitachamehem. So they did hear properly the testimony for certification, and they were prepared to certify. It just happens to be that when they're putting a stamp now on the document, so one of the judges is unfortunately no longer there. So tzrich lemichta b'mosa talasa havina v'chad leisehu olo. So when certifying the document now, because Beitin heard the information, Beitin heard the testimony, and now it's just a question of stamping. So when they stamp the document, do they have to give the information that at the time of stamping, one of the judges is no longer with us? And again, he starts off with, he shouldn't be asking me in my opinion. But that's what you should write. You should write that. That, in other words, we all heard the requisite information for certification, and therefore we are certifying the document, but at the time of certifying, one of us is no longer with us. And now, Rabbi Yirmiyah was gained entrance back into the Beis Medrash based on the fact that I imagine, not the answer that he gave, but the humility that he showed when asked the question.